He glanced at the minotaur next to him. Goblins? Goblins. Marcus hauled his door-sized shield around to the front as angry shrieks erupted from where Terry was pointing and darts came flying at them. Most fell short, but a few had the range to thunk into the shield, and several screaming figures leapt up from under piles of leaves to charge at them with weapons that ranged from crude clubs to savage-looking rusty meat cleavers. The creatures stood on two legs, but none were more than 4 feet tall. They looked like nothing so much as green-skinned, filthy children, with long, floppy ears and two large eyes, drooping noses and pot bellies. Here and there, one of them wore a piece of obviously scavenged armor, and as they charged forward, Yuri pulled his two-hander free and swung it up into a guard position.
"Have you ever fought goblins before?"
Mila asked breathlessly, as she brought her staff around and raised a hand over it.
"No."
"They will try and flank you, and their claws and teeth spread disease. They are every bit as filthy as they smell. Have no mercy, Terry."
"Okay."
He pulled the double-bladed lumbering axe he'd borrowed from Lena out and dropped his backpack, then stepped forward as the first few goblins died screaming to a single swipe of Yuri's greatsword. The fight that ensued was brutal and lasted less than 2 minutes. Terry found his opponents no more challenging than anything else he'd yet encountered, and his axe was so light in his hands it felt like a wiffle bat. He destroyed everything he hit, and though his adrenaline surged with the knowledge that he was in mortal danger, the threat remained purely theoretical in the end. He had no way to gauge the strength of his opponent because none of them got close enough to take a swing at him with their much shorter weapons. The darts flying from the boulders seemed to be the only real danger, but they were fighting so far out from the side of the goblins' attempted ambush that most of the missiles fell far short of their intended targets, and no one was hit. When the last of the melee attackers went down, the as-yet unseen dart throwers fled, or at least stopped trying to hit them. Terry buried his axe in the soft loam with a gentle swing, and then cleaned it off as best he could by scrubbing it with a handful of pine needles and moss. He was breathing through his mouth again, and even that wasn't doing much to reduce the absolutely putrid stench of the little creatures, who, like anything else, shit themselves when they died.
"Ugh, this is fucking god-awful. I've never smelled anything like it,"
he groaned as he moved back to his backpack and picked it up.
"It will get worse soon. Come on, help us drag these things off the path. We cannot leave them on the trail."
Yuri suited actions to words, and, using his sword almost like a shovel, scooped up a corpse and hurled it off the path and away down the hill.
"Why would we bother?"
Terry asked.
"Won't scavengers eat them?"
"There are not any natural creatures above ground, but worms, maggots, and other goblins that will eat goblin flesh,"
Mila answered, as she too began helping clear the trail.
"If we leave these where they are, imagine the ruin we will face when we come back in a few weeks. There will be others along at some point as well, and it would be discourteous. We are professionals. We clean up our messes."
"Huh. Not the attitude I'd have expected adventurers to take, but I guess it makes sense."
Terry gritted his teeth and smiled hard to keep his gag reflex in check as they spent far longer disposing of the corpses than they had making them dead to begin with. Terry very quickly came to the conclusion that if they fought goblins again, he'd be careful to aim for center mass. The detached limbs were the worst, and he fought the urge to puke throughout the cleanup.
"Are we going to be fighting a lot of these things?"
he asked, as he flung the last few arms away down the hill.
"It is likely. Goblins tend to infest the surface caves of almost every dungeon complex,"
Yuri said, waving a hand as he explained.
"At least when we get to Monsoon, we will be able to loot their camps. Goblins are great collectors of gewgaws and trinkets, as well as the coinage of less fortunate travelers. This group of raiders will have come from some cave higher up on the mountain and will not be worth tracking, But it will be a few months at least before enough of their kind mature sufficiently to put together another crew like this. So we should not have to worry about them on the way back.
The Tiger Man glanced back at Terry and touched his own nose as he said,
You have a keen sense of smell. We would not have gotten away unscathed if we had been another 30 feet closer to those rocks when they attacked. Goblins make up for their weakness with cunning. They are more dangerous than this encounter made them seem.
Terry shook his head, nose wrinkled in distaste as he said,
Yeah, lucky me. Lucky us.
Marcus's voice rumbled as he clapped Terry on the shoulder hard enough to make him stumble.
Thank you. You're welcome?
Marcus nodded his heavy head, and the group resumed its march. But this time, Yuri and Marcus seemed to make a point of walking with Mila and Terry. Instead of the 15 to 20 feet of separation they'd spent the morning with, now they were only a few steps ahead. Terry couldn't help but realize, as they did so, that he could now recognize them by scent. Marcus had a heavy, earthy sort of smell to him, while the tigers both had more spice. Yuri's scent had a bit of acidity to it, while Mila's was appealing. Strangely so. He couldn't put his finger on exactly why.
Ugh, and the headache is back.
He rubbed at his temples and shook his head, wishing for nothing so much as for his sense of smell to go away. He wasn't accustomed to getting so much information through his nose, and didn't know how to deal with it now that he had it.
Something wrong?
Mila dipped her head a bit to look up at him. At some point during the fight, she'd drawn her hood up over her head, but he could still see her ears shifting his way.
Sensory overload. Nothing to be done. I'll adjust. Sensory overload?
Yuri asked.
What does that even mean?
It means everything stinks, is what it means.
Terry snapped, biting off each word as his frustration got the better of him.
Don't worry about it. Fine, fine. Just tell us if it is goblin stink. There are griffins and land sharks out this way, too, so if you happen to get a whiff of either of those, it would be good to warn us. What's a land shark?
Terry asked, glancing around.
Big, hungry, and profitable if dead.
Marcus rumbled. Yuri chuckled and touched his nose, then pointed at Marcus as he added,
The problem is that they come up from underneath, and the only real warning you get is a rumbling in the ground a few seconds before it surfaces. They are about twice the size of a big horse, and they can swallow people whole. Not that it would not chew you up for spite or flavor. Jesus, anything else I should know about?
Terry asked.
Let us see.
Yuri glanced up as though in thought, and ticked off his fingers. Trolls,
I am told you will see those on this trail every so often. Wolves, which are not really a problem unless there is a warg leading them. Sprites, nasty little bloodsuckers those. That is most of the big ones in these parts. Well, and other adventurers, of course. What?
Yuri grinned, showing his teeth in a display that wasn't anything like a normal smile.
Well, sure. There are no rules out in the wilds. Adventurer out here is just another word for bandit. Every so often you will get a crew that specializes in picking off dungeon delvers like us on the way back from a raid. Why go in risking life and limb when you can just kill the poor saps who already did all the work? I fucking hate this place.
Terry nodded and said,
Got it. Essentially what you're telling me is if it moves and it's not us, kill it.
My brother is exaggerating.
Mila shot Yuri a venomous glare.
Slightly,
Marcus rumbled.
Marcus!
The Minotaur held up his hands in absent-minded surrender, but neither made eye contact nor broke his stride.
Why do you all do this?
Terry asked.
Fun,
Yuri said, still smiling in that predatory manner of his.
Profit.
Marcus added.
Necessity. Mila said, with a sour tone. Despite what these two hoodlums seem intent on filling your head with, we are out here because we have to be.
Yuri's smile lapsed, and he turned his attention to the trail, while Marcus scratched at his jawline absently. Terry waited, but when no one offered anything more, he said,
Really? Just gonna leave me hanging like that?
Mila sighed. We received a quest from our tribe. Yuri and I did. Marcus is tagging along because, well, he is Marcus.
What do you have to do, exactly? We were sent to find and kill the Mad Sea,
Yuri declared.
We cannot go back to the tribe until we have finished this. So what's the story behind this Mad Sea?
Terry asked.
Do you want the short version or the long version?
Yuri asked.
Short version for now,
Mila said. The short version is that there is a legendary creature inside the Monsoon Dungeon Complex, the Mad Sea. It has supposedly been around for ages, so long there is even a limerick about it.
She held up a finger and recited, Monsoon depths are cloaked in fear, for therein dwells the Mad Sea, dear. Should she find you and come near, you'll hear her screaming loud and clear. Her powers are both great and queer. Your only chance is flight by ear.
Who the fuck came up with that?
Terry asked.
That's terrible.
Yuri glanced back at Terry and showed his teeth as he said,
The only survivor. The story is that he was stark raving mad and more than half dead when they found him at the dungeon entrance, and that rhyme was the only thing they got out of him before he died. That was what, few hundred years ago? I have a bet with Marcus that even if this thing did exist, it is long dead now. Thousands of adventurers have been through the Monsoon Complex from top to bottom, and no one has ever seen anything that could possibly be this Mad Sea there.
No one that lived,
Marcus commented.
So, wait, you guys are from the Eastern Steppes, right? Isn't that far away?
Very,
Marcus chipped in.
So?
Terry left the question hanging. Mila sighed and said, Yuri has challenged to be chieftain. This quest is to prove his worth.
I smell bullshit, Terry said.
Then he glanced up at Marcus and hastily added,
Figurative bullshit. No offense.
None taken,
Marcus rumbled complacently. Mila's lips twisted with distaste as she said, The shaman is, well, there's no other way to say it. He is an evil bastard. Yuri is the sixth warrior to challenge for the role of chieftain. The shaman has the right to declare a quest of fitness, but all the quests he has given so far have been even more suicidal than this one. Terry looked at Yuri, but the man seemed to have lost his good humor. No wonder.
And you're putting up with this evil bastard shaman because... That is part of the long version of the story,
Yuri said, his words clipped and precise.
It is getting late. We should start looking for a suitable camp.
Terry nodded, and they walked on in silence for a while. It wasn't until they found a campsite and settled in that Mila glanced over to him with a worried look and said, Not having second thoughts, are you? We did not exactly lie to get you to come this far, you know. We have been on this journey for almost 2 years now, and we really do make our living as monster hunters. There should be quite a lot of coin to be made off this quest.
He thought for a moment before answering. As he did, he glanced over and caught Yuri looking away. Marcus didn't bother hiding the fact that he had stopped what he was doing, and was waiting to hear Terry's answer.
I said I'd come, and I will. I have my own reasons for needing to be away from Florence for a while. You seem like decent people. I'll see this through with you, one way or the other. We've come clean with you, and your answer is honorable. But I have one question, boss.
Yuri squatted on his haunches and looked at Terry squarely as he said,
Who are you,
Or perhaps a better question would be, what are you, really?
I was wondering when this would happen. Probably makes sense that they'd ask now, when it's risky to turn back and I've committed to going on.
Why ask now? Were you waiting until you felt I'd be compelled to answer?
Yuri gave him a level stare.
We have a right to know.
Terry stared right back, though the effect was probably blunted by the fact that they couldn't see his face.
Actually, no, you fucking do not. My help was asked for. Knowing my secrets wasn't part of the deal when I agreed to come. What, you think I wear a mask for shits and giggles? Are you a zone agent?
Yuri asked. The question was pitched softly, but Terry noticed the man's hands were poised to draw the greatsword he'd put on the ground in front of him.
Yuri, Mila protested, but the tiger man cut her off with a sharp gesture and pointed at Terry as he said,
Answer the question. No. In point of fact, the one who gave my mask to me asked me to wipe out the Twilight Zone.
Yuri started laughing incredulously, and Terry shrugged, adding,
It's a long-term goal. What, you guys think you're the only ones with impossible quests? I can play that game too.
Mila tilted her head. Are you serious? He nodded, then said,
One thing at a time, though.
So you really are a template?
Yuri asked. His eyes flickered to his sister as she nodded, then widened as they returned to Terry, who simply said,
Yeah. Now I really want to see his face,
Yuri declared.
Templates are worth a fucking fortune. Am I missing something about the difference between the words monster hunter and slaver?
Terry asked, with deceptive mildness.
Half the jobs we get are bounties.
Yuri waved the concern away.
And there are always people willing to pay for templates. If you knew, why did you not say anything, Mila?
First of all, because you have been known to let the glitter of gold get the better of your common sense, brother, which, in this case, should be telling you that Terry Mack is not someone you have any hope of beating. Second, because the three of us working together with surprise probably could not overcome the sort of strength he has already demonstrated, with you and with the goblins.
I'm not sure about that, but we'll roll with it. I'm pretty sure she's building to a point.
Third, because he is a good man, who has so far kept his word in every instance, even to his own detriment.
Zone agent, pfft! He has killed zone agents!
How would you know?
Yuri asked pointedly.
We just met him a few days ago.
Because a survivor came and thanked him right to his face while I was there asking for his help. Did you enjoy the Minotress milk I gave you yesterday, brother? Did it help ease the last of your pains?
He nodded, clearly taken aback, and she pressed him, jabbing a finger at him as she said,
Well, he gave his last bottle of that to her, to help with wounds given to her by the zone beast he killed to save her life. So one more word about how much money he is worth, and I swear, by all the powers, that I will never heal you again.
My God, she's on the verge of tears. Yuri shifted from a squat to his knees and put both hands on the ground, then bowed his head to his sister as he said,
Forgive me.
To him, she said, pointing at Terry.
Yuri shifted without hesitation and bowed at Terry, who flushed and waved his hand in a lifting motion as he said,
Get up, man. You're embarrassing me. If I'd known I was worth that much, well, I might have turned myself in. Think nothing of it.
Exactly, Mila said, glaring at her brother as she added, Think nothing of it.
Holy crap, she's scary when she's mad. I suppose we know who wears the pants in this family, huh?
He said, looking at Marcus as he tried to break the tension. Marcus smirked, but didn't bother to answer. Chapter 26. Never Hurts to Plan. Terry wasn't sure what he'd expected to see when they got to the entrance to this much-talked-about dungeon complex, but he did know it wasn't this.
It looks like the city park after Battle of the Bands, only worse.
Rickety picnic tables and several old tarps were set up near what essentially amounted to a gaping hole in the side of the mountain. The rickety, splintery tables had carvings all over them, initials, dates, and more than a few crude drawings, most of which looked like either penises or boobs. There were also some rather suspicious stains on most of the old wooden slats that made up each table surface, and bones of various kinds were scattered across the clearing in front of the cave. The entrance itself reminded him of a postcard he'd once seen of the entrance to Carlsbad, down in, where was it? Arizona? New Mexico? One of those places. Except instead of a paved switchback populated by well-heeled tourists and wildly gesticulating children, there was a treacherous, shit-covered mudslide strewn with the remains of goblins and other heavily decayed and less recognizable bits. The stench of the place was so overwhelming that after one particularly ill-timed gust, Terry twisted to one side and lost his lunch in a gut-wrenching heave. Once he'd regained some sense of equilibrium, he immediately wound one of his spare socks around his face and started breathing through his mouth. Flies buzzed everywhere, and the place had a desolatory, run-down feel to it, like a long-abandoned amusement park or dilapidated haunted house. A huge clapboard sign had been nailed to the cliff face just above the entrance with what looked like climbing pitons. It declared in faded red lettering that, given the feel of the place, was probably blood. Monsoon Dungeon Complex. Enter at your own risk.
Are you fucking serious?
Terry muttered to himself as he looked around.
Are you fucking serious?
Yuri said, waving a hand at Terry.
What is the sock?
It stinks. Did you somehow miss me chucking my last meal into the woods just now?
Get used to it. It is not like the inside is going to be any better. Goblins shit where they eat. I am pretty sure they eat their shit too, but I could not prove that.
Ugh! Why would anyone voluntarily go in there?
Terry asked. It was mostly a rhetorical question, but Mila answered him anyway.
The dungeon complex is home to a variety of rare species of both fauna and flora that yield rare and expensive components or serve other valuable functions. Not to mention delvers after both die with enough regularity to practically stock the place with salvage that can be very profitable if it can be retrieved. Typically, the further in you go, the more valuable the salvage due to the skill required to get that far. The goblins only nest near the entrance. Unlike here, on the surface, in the dungeons they get eaten rather quickly, so once we are past their camps, the smell will improve.
Why doesn't Florence just send an army to clear the place out and turn it into a mine, then?
Terry asked, turning to look at Mila. Marcus rumbled,
Startup costs.
Terry blinked and turned to the Minotaur, who shrugged and added,
Losses would exceed gains. That is why dungeon delving teams range typically from 4 to 6 people.
Yuri chipped in.
Aside from the fact that only so many people can fight effectively in confined spaces, bring any more than 6 and you risk taking a loss on the trip, even if it is an otherwise successful run. Well, okay then.
Terry shook his head as he looked at the garbage, shit, bones, and bloody stains all over everything. Flies buzzed and swarmed around the fresher deposits, and even the air seemed hazy with stench.
I really don't think I'm vaccinated for this kind of work. It'll be a miracle if I don't wind up with some kind of fantastic disease by the time this is all said and done.
For the first time, Terry seriously considered turning back.
killing the goblins hadn't bothered him any more than killing the zone beasts, but the moral implications of slaughtering intelligent beings were something he'd made a conscious decision to set aside for the moment. This, however, was an entirely different kind of obstacle, one he hadn't expected to face. Violence was one thing. Disease, on the other hand...
I suppose water isn't going to be a problem?
He asked.
We have a bottomless flask,
Mila said, smiling slightly.
Food is our only real limiting factor.
Relax, Terry. This is not our first expedition.
Yuri slapped him on the back and jerked his head.
Come on, the sooner we get past the goblin camps, the sooner you can take that ridiculous-looking sock off. Not sure how that does you any good wrapped around the front of your mask, but magic is as magic does, I guess.
Marcus had slipped his pack off, and as Terry watched, he opened it and pulled out a short sword that reminded Terry of a Roman gladius, save for the fact that it had a knuckle duster guard. The sheath was plain leather, and Marcus tossed the weapon to Yuri, who caught it, and tossed his own massive two-hander back at the Minotaur, who caught the weapon in turn and slid it into his pack. The pack was about 4 feet high. The sword was almost 6. It fit, disappearing without a trace into a side pocket no more than 2 feet in length that ran along the outer edge of the pack.
The fuck?
Marcus and Yuri glanced at each other, then at Terry as they said in unison,
Magic. I hate this place.
Mila chuckled and set her hand on Terry's shoulder.
You have plenty of mysteries of your own, Terry. Do you need a smaller weapon as well, or will you be all right with that axe in close quarters combat?
Should be fine. If I have to, I'll swap ends and use it as a club.
The balance will be poor.
Doesn't matter. It weighs next to nothing. I've got a hunting knife as well.
Mila's eyebrow rose. Then she nodded, her lips parting in understanding.
I had forgotten for a moment your disproportionate strength. Fair enough, then.
All right, crew, gather round. Here is the plan.
Yuri was flattening a large roll of paper on one of the decrepit tables as Terry and the others gathered around. He saw immediately that it was a map, and one of the worries nibbling at the back of his mind resolved itself.
Naturally, if so many people venture into these caves, they'll sell maps of the place.
The Tiger Man tapped the top center of the map and said,
We are here. The entry cavern is typically empty, but it is a dumping ground, just like out here, only much, much worse.
He paused and glanced at Terry as he said,
Try not to fill your sock. Fantastic.
Terry wasted a scowl on Yuri, who grinned as he returned his attention to the map.
Watch your boots and step carefully. Let Marcus clear any debris that needs moving. Anyone gets cut and you let Mila know immediately. No fucking around, no macho bullshit. Even the smallest cut needs to be healed. I talked to some regular monsoon delvers about the upper levels, and they all said we may get attacked near the back of the entry cave by slingers or archers. They will be on a high ledge, and we do not have range, so we will have to rush the entrance. Here, if it happens. Once inside, Marcus's shield will be big enough to keep us safe from ranged, because these caves are only about 6 to 10 feet wide. We clear any resistance in the cave and head here.
He tapped a second open-looking space, joined to the first, by a series of branching caverns that looked almost like a network of tributaries or capillaries.
These caves all head the same way, so if you get split off from the group, just do not turn around. There are only a few dead ends, here, here, and here. Just alternate choosing left and right, and you will eventually pop out here, which is our first regroup point in the event of a split-up. Ideally, we will make it here before the goblins know we are coming. It is a fight all the way through this cavern, and we need to kill everything that is big enough to pick up a weapon. Once that is done, we will take some time and go through the camp looking for salvage. I do not want to spend too much time on it, though, because this close to the entrance there is not likely to be anything worthwhile. But let us be thorough. If we take fire in the entry cave, those archers will reappear here from one or both of these two entrances. So if we can, we will clear those before we head out into the middle.
Yuri glanced at each of them in turn, and they nodded their understanding before he set his finger down on the far side of the second open space.
This is where things start to get interesting. Everyone repeat after me. Left, left, right, left, right, left, left.
He felt like something of an idiot, but Terry did as he was told. As they spoke, Yuri tapped a series of branches in turn, ending in a roughly circular open space about half the size of the first two.
This is the entrance to the second level of the dungeon. We are skipping the other camps and the entrance to Orktown deeper in. This room is not safe, so once we get here we have to keep going. There are pitons set in the rim of this pit. Test each before putting your weight on it, and unless shit goes sideways, we all end up here.
Tapping a disconnected room across the parchment, he said,
"Typical encounters on the second level will be rot crawlers, giant beetles, ferrous moss, and gelatin." "Gelatin?"
Terry asked. Mila said, "They are amorphous creatures that absorb and digest whatever they find, typically carrion. They will usually avoid fire and heat sources, but if it is bigger than you, it will try and rush you. Use something blunt. They are held together internally by tendons. Snap enough of them, and it will lose cohesion and the ability to move. Only then is it safe to cut open."
"Why blunt?"
"Gelatin is thick enough to steal the momentum from an edged weapon before it does much damage, and the splashback is acidic. You cut it and it will spray you."
"Ew. Close. More like, ow. That shit really stings. They're also great sources of useful salvage, because they only dissolve flesh, blood, and bone. Metal gets integrated into its structure. They are like roving treasure chests. We see one, we pop it."
Yuri added,
"Great. Only flesh, blood, and bone. Fuck did I get myself into?" "The second level is a mostly straight shot, because it connects to the old dwarven roads here. Once we find the main highway, though, we will have to keep our eyes out for goblins and orcs." "Ambushes are a distinct possibility, but orcs do not smell much better than goblins, so with Terry's nose, I am not too worried. The first place we can safely camp is here. Any more questions?"
Yuri looked around. Terry raised a hand and said,
"Light?"
Marcus slung his pack around and pulled a torch out of another too small to possibly fit that pocket, and handed it over.
"Do not light it unless you need it,"
Yuri said.
"Mila is our light, and despite what I said earlier, we really, really, really do not want to get split up. Most of this was strictly cover-your-ass planning. Anything else?"
"Yeah, I've got about 1,000 questions, but I think most of them will get answered on the job."
The Tiger Man grinned, showing off an impressive set of teeth.
"That's the spirit. Name the turns I gave you earlier." "Left, left, right, left, right, left, left,"
Terry said automatically. Marcus rumbled deep in his chest as he nodded with approval, and Yuri's grin widened.
"We will make a monster hunter out of you yet. Let's go."
Chapter 27. Friendly Fear.
"Which direction?"
"Dude, how the fuck should I know?
There's no breeze. What do I fucking look like, a fucking dog? All I can tell you is that there's goblins somewhere out there in the main tunnel. What is a dude?
Mila listened to the exchange between her brother and Terry, conducted in hushed but heated whispers. The raid had so far gone largely according to plan. They now sat uninjured at a ragged hole in the wall on the second floor of the complex, beyond which was what Yuri had earlier described as the old dwarven road. They'd fought several times, and on each occasion, Terry had demonstrated strength, speed, and keen reflexes more than sufficient to overcome his lack of experience both with fighting as part of a team and with his weapon of choice.
He learns quickly and forgets nothing of what he is told.
Before Terry, Mila had known of templates only through stories she had heard, most of which suggested they were feeble creatures that died quickly once they reached Celestine. It was therefore imperative that the eldritch races who required them to breed find them and protect them at all costs. Yet before her squatted an imposing specimen whose every movement seemed born of a deadly inner grace. Though it was clear he had no formal training with an axe, he did well through pure physical ability. Then there was his unquestioned skill in unarmed fighting. Yuri had confided in her that he had never seen anyone move and strike with such precision, and that the thought of a rematch terrified him.
Are they all like this? Surely not. Otherwise, why do all the stories claim they are weak?
Mila had never made a study of templates, reasonably secure in her belief that she'd never encounter one. All she knew was that they were rare, could breed with any of the intelligent races, bestowed powerful gifts upon their mates, and were born of another world. Now she wondered just what powerful gifts entailed. Lena Lowe's milk was presumably one such gift, but it was the sort of gift that hardly suited Mila.
What am I even thinking about? He's not my mate.
She chuffed, the insides of her ears growing hot, as she heard Terry say,
Look, wait here. I'll go out and sneak around, see if I can figure out which way this fucking stench is coming from.
Yuri asked,
Why are you swearing so much? Are you okay?
Mila turned her attention to Terry as the man behind the blank wooden mask took a deep breath and let it out slowly, then said,
Not really, but I'll adjust. Well, you're not thinking clearly, Terry,
Yuri said, reaching out and putting a hand on the template's shoulder.
You need to calm down and breathe. You have no way to see out there, and if they are close, they already know we are here. Let us wait a few minutes, just relax, and tell us if the scent gets stronger.
Yuri seems to have really taken him under his wing.
Initially, Mila wondered how things would go, but she needn't have concerned herself. After the initial fight with the goblins, during which Terry demonstrated his willingness to pull his weight, any reservations Yuri may have had seemed to dissipate. She knew Terry's gift of the Minotress milk had moved her brother deeply, as had her tale of the zone beast survivor. Marcus hadn't said much, one way or another, but his behavior led her to believe that he too had accepted Terry's presence and acknowledged his value. Still, Mila wondered. While her impression of him generally was that he was reliable, it was clear that he was ill at ease with his surroundings. There was a tension that never seemed to leave him, and it wasn't just now. The same tension had been present in the set of his shoulders before Yuri had even drawn his attention for the first time in the tavern. As a member of a predator species, Mila knew that tension instinctively for what it was. So had Yuri.
He feels exposed, hunted. He has the mindset of prey. That is why Yuri accosted him in the first place, thinking he would be easy to move. I thought so too.
Now that they knew his capabilities, it made his aura of constant nervous tension all the more discordant. He never really seemed to relax.
It's not getting any stronger. I'll be right back. I won't go more than 5 steps either way. and I'll still be able to see the light from Mila's staff to make my way back. Should be enough to let me tell direction. Terry, wait.
Yuri's tone was firm, but fell short of confrontational.
Think about where you are. This is a dungeon. There are no second chances here. Be patient. In a situation like this, the one who moves first dies first. Stay calm. We are the predators here, remember. They are the prey.
That's my brother. Our thoughts roam the same way.
Terry's hands twisted around the haft of his axe. Mila actually heard the wood creaking under the strain. Yet after a moment, he shifted from a squat to his knees and settled in, his chest rising and falling slowly. She frowned, irritated for the thousandth time that she couldn't see his face or smell him. While her sense of smell was apparently not nearly as strong as his, it would have told her much of him. She could sense the flow of magic around the mask when she concentrated, enfolding his body and smoothing out his edges, blending him into the background. It was subtle, not a spell, but more a state of being tied to the mask.
He probably could go out there and get away with it, but in the dungeon Yuri is the boss. I cannot have Terry doubting his decisions, and it is the safer move.
Yuri and Mila had been dungeon delving for the better part of the last 2 years with Marcus, usually hiring a guide for each of the dungeons they plumbed. As a strategy, it worked fairly well. Yuri was a conservative leader, and they'd never lost anyone in any of their dives, though they'd often had close shaves. He was right in that patience was a virtue down here. Goblins and orcs were not typically very patient. They set ambushes when they knew someone was coming. If that someone didn't arrive, they tended to leave their hiding places to go find out why.
This time, though, we brought Terry instead of a guide, in part because we knew no guide would be willing to take us as far as we need to go.
As she thought that, she wondered how well the template would hold up once they reached the lower levels, out beyond the maps. She glanced at Yuri and caught his eye. She knew that he was wondering the same thing.
Are you going to be all right?
Mila asked softly, speaking up for the first time as she turned her attention back to Terry.
I'll adjust. You people seem to have your shit together, and this is what you do for a living. I'm just not used to being one mistake away from dying all the time. It's got me stressed. Huh.
Marcus, laconic as usual, said nothing more, but he set his own hand on the template's shoulder briefly, then drew it away and took up position closest to the crevice that led out to the road. He kept his shield at hand, setting it on the ground and leaning his forearms along the upper edge as he too settled in to wait. Mila watched Terry's attention fixate on the shield, and he was still for several long moments before he said,
"We should douse the light."
Yuri and Mila both looked at Terry with raised eyebrows. He glanced from one to the other and said,
"What? They can see it. Douse the light, and we listen for them. That shield Marcus has is big enough to completely cover all but the very top of the entrance here, so let's do that and see who comes knocking." "Orcs and goblins can see in the dark. We cannot,"
Yuri said, pointing out the obvious flaw in the plan from Mila's perspective. Terry nodded and said,
"Yeah, but doesn't that mean the difference between no light and low light will be worse for them than for us? When the fight starts, they'll be facing a sudden light source while we face them. With the shield covering the opening here, they can't really surprise us. If I smell or hear them coming, I'll reach out and give everyone a tap to get ready."
Yuri pursed his lips thoughtfully, his head tipping from one side to the other idly as he turned the idea over in his mind. At length, he nodded.
"Let us give it a try. Marcus, if you would."
Marcus shifted his shield to cover the craggy entrance and sat down, leaning against it to keep it in place. Once he was set, Mila doused the greenish light coming from her staff with a whispered word. The darkness was immediate and stifling. Dungeon crawlers feared many things, but one of the most pervasive fears was fear of the dark. It was not the unjustified childish fear of the unknown, either. Rather, it was the sure and certain knowledge of what waited for them in the dark that drove them to fear it. Most of those who made their living as guides were of a race or had an ability that allowed them to see in the dark. Mila's magic didn't allow for such a thing. Aside from some minor prestidigitation that any magic user could do, such as making the gem in her staff glow, Mila's magic focused on abjuration and healing. She could conjure walls of various types, banish lesser demons, create wards, and delineate zones of influence that changed some characteristic within the space. Healing was her secondary school. Thus, it cost her much more to heal injuries than to prevent them from happening in the first place. Yuri's cautious style of leadership was at least in part to suit her abilities. It was always much easier for them to win a defensive battle for which they were properly prepared. It was also why they usually didn't take ranged combatants with them into dungeons. Her walls usually blocked in both directions. She felt a tap on her knee. How long have we been waiting? Surely no more than a minute. Time acted strangely in the dark, but Terry had warned her, and so she prepared to cast a spell. She had an innate sense of direction, and knew that they were currently facing almost due south. The spell she had in mind would bolster combat for anyone facing a given direction, but it only lasted a minute or two, so she had to wait to cast it until combat began. Once she had the spell firmly in mind, she listened intently, waiting for the battle to begin. A scrabbling sound reached her, and a stone skittered across an open space somewhere in the dark ahead of her, followed by a blood-curdling scream and the thunk of something heavy slamming into Marcus's shield. She waved her hand across the gem at the top of her staff and held it aloft as it blazed to life. Yuri was to her left, Terry to her right, and Marcus stood like a bulwark just in front of her. She couldn't see any of their opponents, but that was fine. It wasn't her job to dispatch them. Mila quickly murmured the words of her spell, and the staff channeled her magic into the air around them in the form of a swirl of green that expanded and then vanished. The only outward evidence of her spell was a subtle breeze at their backs, blowing toward the enemy. As long as the breeze could be felt, strength, speed, endurance, and the senses would all be enhanced. Marcus shifted his shield slightly as his mace rose and fell, crushing his opponents as they came within range. Yuri used his short sword to good effect, stabbing around the body of Marcus's shield while simultaneously using it for cover himself. Terry bolstered Marcus's right side, watching the fight and slamming his axe into anything that looked like it might slip past the Minotaur's defense. It was an effective choke point strategy, and the three men in front of Mila worked to dispatch their enemies with almost mechanical precision, until with a despairing wail, a lone survivor lost his courage and fled down the road. Terry darted over the mound of corpses to follow. Yuri put out his hand and yelled, but the template paid him no heed as he disappeared out of Mila's view. A bare second later, the shrill scream of a goblin was cut brutally short, and quiet descended, punctuated only by ragged breathing.
Idiot.
Yuri spat the word, and stepped out into the comparatively wide open space of the underground road.
I keep telling you that you have to be patient. I really do not want to see you killed.
That last one was going to get away,
Terry protested, as Mila gingerly stepped through the mass of corpses. The greenish light shed by her staff revealed a broad avenue, ill-used by time, and covered with chunks of broken rocks and other debris. Marcus was the last through the hole, and as Mila scanned the area, Yuri was facing off with Terry.
So you let it go.
Worst case scenario, they bring back more goblins.
So what? We are here to kill them anyway. Letting the survivors spread the word is not entirely a bad thing.
Terry was practically vibrating with nervous energy, and as Mila noticed this, she also saw Yuri take a careful step back. It was obvious that he was looking at the axe trembling visibly in the template's grasp.
That's so counterintuitive, I don't even know where to start,
he said after a long moment.
I'm sorry. I won't go chasing stragglers again.
He shuddered as he spoke, then visibly relaxed, holding his gory axe low across his body. It, along with his near-featureless mask and the gray rain cloak he wore, now blood-spattered, made him look terrifying there in the shadows, particularly with the magic of his mask drawing him into the background. He looked like a vengeful wraith.
No, not a ghost, not an undead. He looks like a murderer, an indiscriminate faceless killer, straight out of a nightmare.
Mila felt her heart flutter with fear at the image that, once rooted in her mind, refused to dissipate. Yuri had put his sword away and was speaking with his hands up, palms out.
There was no harm in it this time, fortunately. This is your first delve. I can understand you are anxious. I just need you to understand that you cannot act on impulse down here. There are simply too many ways for it to backfire. As it stands, you got him, but so what? What do you think happens when these goblins and the orcs with them fail to return? Either way, whoever is left gets warned that there are delvers here. All this does is spare some of the particulars of our group, which is good, do not get me wrong, but the gain is not worth the potential loss of a teammate. You are one of us, Terry. I would rather turn tail and run than lose you, or anyone. Living delvers can always try again tomorrow. Dead ones become dungeon decorations, or worse. All right?
Terry nodded, then asked,
Why are you all afraid of me? What?
Mila's brother licked his lips unconsciously, and Terry waved a hand at them and said,
I can smell this acrid edge to everyone. You're scared, and I'm the only one here.
That is because you are terrifying, Terry.
Mila spoke softly and stepped up to stand beside her brother.
The axe, the bloody rain cloak, the faceless mask, and your strength. We know you are on our side, but as nervous as you are right now, you are making a terrifying impression. Calm down. Trust us.
They watched as Terry looked down at his hands, lifting his left off the haft of his axe to rub the blood absently between his fingers. Then his head tipped back to stare up at the darkness above them, and his whisper was loud in the silence.
I hate this place.
Something tells me he's not just talking about the dungeon.
Before they could say anything to him, Terry shook himself and jerked a thumb over his shoulder.
We're going that way?
Yuri nodded slowly. Terry sighed and turned sideways, offering his hand across his body in a be my guest gesture. Marcus, bless him, stepped past Mila, walked up to Terry and stared down at him for a long moment in silence. When he spoke, it was with an uncharacteristic gentleness.
It's okay, Terry. Is it?
He asked, an unmistakable note of weary resignation in his voice.
Can we go? I really think we need to go. This place stinks of shit, goblins, blood, and fear. I like none of those things.
Just a moment, Mila said.
She stepped up to Terry and touched his cloak gently with her staff. The emerald pulsed, and all the blood, viscera, and other unmentionable bits slid off him and pooled at his feet, leaving him clean. As Mila touched Marcus next, and then Yuri, she said,
If we are going to leave this place behind, best leave it all behind.
Terry was trembling as she looked back at him, and his voice came in a whisper, heavy with emotion.
Thank you.
With Marcus in the lead, they set out. Terry waited until everyone had passed him, taking up the rearmost position, as had become his habit. No one had asked him to do it, and it was not without risk. But though he was a bundle of nerves, he'd never allowed them to be caught out from behind. Mila knew without a doubt that it would be a mistake to turn and look at him, much less speak to him. She might not be able to smell him or see his face, but she was coming to know him, and she wondered again if Terry Mack would be able to stay the course. She hoped so, but she couldn't help but wonder. He had indisputable courage in the face of deadly combat, but the prey animal stress she sensed from him was only getting worse as time went on. Chapter 28, FKT.
What we do in life echoes in eternity. Hello, my name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die. Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Terry sat with his back to the wall, replaying in his mind scenes from movies wherein the hero never broke. Movies where the good guys won. Movies where it all worked out in the end. Somehow.
God, why can't this be a movie, or a dream, or something I can shut off and walk away from? Why does this have to be real? Why does this have to be my life?
He glanced over to where the others slept, even though in the pitch black he couldn't see a damn thing. Then he looked toward the equally invisible wall of stone Mila had conjured to cover the only way in or out of the room they now rested in. While it was great to have a solid wall of stone between him and whatever the hell lurked out there, he couldn't help but wonder if the room was big enough for four people to breathe the air all night. What if they used up all the oxygen in here and just never woke up?
By the time it occurred to him to ask, everyone else was asleep, secure in the knowledge that anything that tried to come at them would have to go through the stone wall first and wake them up in the process. Terry found sleep elusive.
This isn't the first time they've done this. I've got to trust these people to know what they're doing down here.
But did they have any idea what it was that kept them alive when they took a breath? Did they know?
Terry wondered, and his nerves wouldn't let him sleep. So here he was, leaning against a wall in absolute darkness, trying not to think about how badly he wanted to scream, or cry, or just break down and completely flip his shit.
It's just an excuse. Of course we'll all be alive tomorrow when everyone wakes up. Of course we will be.
He felt sore, and had for the last few days, but not nearly as sore as he feared he would be. He hoped that was a sign his body was acclimating to the new stresses being placed on it by whatever power had filled him since he came here. He'd been initially terrified that the fights would tear him up inside again, but it hadn't happened.
If Shai were here, I wouldn't be going through this. She'd tell me what I need to know, or at least what I need to hear. She'd help me cope.
He hoped she and Lena were okay. He wondered what they were doing right now. He had no idea when now was topside. It could be in the middle of the day for all he knew. He'd lost all track of time. Had the Vicerain been given his note? Had it worked? He hadn't dared get close enough to the keep to find out, and hadn't gone back to Mama Moo's after getting the gear. He spent the night sleeping in an alleyway near the docks, and no one had bothered him.
If not, I'll kill the Vicerain. I don't care what it takes. But this is the very last fucking time I let someone take my family from me.
The thought that Shai and Lena were his family now set him back, though. Were they? He certainly felt so, but how did they see him? As a means to an end, certainly. But was there more to it? He thought so, but how could he be sure? How would they feel about his methods? Would they even know how he'd done it if the Vicerain did free them? Had they gotten the note he'd left for them at Mama Moo's, asking them to wait for him, warning them not to try and leave the city? Or would they be long gone when he returned?
If they are gone, how would I even know?
He gripped his head and struggled to control his breathing, lower his heart rate, and stay calm. He was so far out of his depth that it felt like he was drowning, and it felt like that all the